On the programme, After the Future, the EVA International Contemporary Art Exhibition in Limerick. Hello and welcome to Arts Tonight. 35 years ago, a small group of people in Limerick got together to start an international visual art exhibition based in the city. Over the years, EVA grew to be synonymous with the best of new and emerging Irish art and artists, and a platform for international painting, sculpture and visual art of all forms, not just in Limerick, but in Ireland. Changes and developments in recent years have seen EVA move from an annual exhibition to a biennial, with the new director Woodrow Kernahan appointed last September. This year's EVA International has been put together by Annie Fletcher, an Irish curator based in the Netherlands, and it features work by 40 artists. They were chosen from about 2,000 submissions from over 75 countries. And the loose theme, or overarching headline, for the exhibition this year is After the Future, of which more later. Tonight we'll hear from some of the artists taking part, we'll talk to the organisers and generally get a flavour of what's a very lively and sometimes unexpected mix of art forms in many venues around Limerick. We'll also get an assessment of it all from critics Aidan Dunn and Gemma Tipton. But first, we've been to Limerick. Architect Hugh Murray, chairman of EVA for many years, sets the scene.
So we're outside the City Gallery, which is in the centrepiece of George in Limerick, in Perry Square, in the People's Park, a very beautiful park. And then you wander through George in Limerick mostly to see the rest of EVA, which is spread around. And so you walk two blocks from here to Collins Street and then another two blocks down the hill to an abandoned, empty, NAMA-possessed office building, which we've converted into a gallery, which works very well. 104, 105 O'Collins Street beside the Brazen Head Bar, a well-known bar. And when you come out, then you wander to the far opposite corner of that block to the Faber Art Group, where they have another commercially abandoned building where they're doing a very interesting piece for EVA based on Lost and Found and so on, which happens to be opposite the Garda station, which is kind of appropriate. And then when you come out of there, if you look up, you'll see our tallest, shiny, new glass building called River Point. And on the top of that, it's a very interesting architectural installation of models of buildings that are you're invited to vandalise with spray paint, which is good fun and has been remarkably transformed. And then when you come out, you can wander along the riverfront, upriver, all the way to the Arthur's Quay Park, where the giant X made out of containers by Luc Delos, a Belgian architect, which was previously erected 19 years ago, and Annie Fletcher, the curator, has selected to repeat it. And it's a very powerful piece, and everybody identifies it with EVA, and nearly everybody remembers it from previously. And that's part of the beauty of Limerick, is that it's really embedded in the city, and people are hugely supportive of it and identify with it, and to the point where if they see anything they consider strange or unusual or weird, they'll automatically assume it's EVA, even though it mightn't be. And that's a very good thing.
Inside the City Gallery, the opening's in full swing. Several video installations are playing simultaneously, including Priscilla Fernandez, Product of Play. And many of the guests discover the pleasure of shuffling through red paper documents, which in fact have a particular political content, littered through all the exhibition spaces like piles of leaves. We meet Helen Carey, new director of Limerick City Gallery, and Sheila Deegan, arts officer of Limerick City Council.
It's actually extraordinarily moving work. You start off with a lot of colour, with a sort of floor piece by Sanja Vukovic, and it's a fascinating thing that you find yourself wading through. It's actually the joint shadow report from the United Nations around torture and around women's rights within that. And it's very interesting dawning, if you like, where you feel that you're walking through a rather leafy, scattered work, but suddenly you realise that what you're kicking around is the Joint Shadow Report from the United Nations. And that's kind of one of the things about EVA International, is that the beauty of it, of this show, is rather underpinned by a darkness around that beauty. You get a lot of colour, you get a lot of, I suppose, form in Annabelle Catalan's work, which is suspended and which transforms what's a conventional from a collection room into something that's about gravity, and that's about the Arte Povera period, where you have very low-level materials transformed into something extraordinarily beautiful with fluorescent light within lighting up in a gravity-defying kind of hang. That's downstairs. There's also another really remarkable piece by Marcel Brotars, who's a sort of a really high point in European art history. And the slides that he has downstairs are so sensitive and so beautiful. It's sort of almost transposed, or how do you say, coming up against Emma Houlihan's work, which is concrete. So that you have this delicacy, literally concrete. It is one of those kind of, oh my God, it's a big lump of concrete or several big lumps of concrete, which within the sensitive gallery spaces gets transformed into something that talks about energy and deconstructed energy.
Sheila Deegan, Limerick City Arts Officer. Yes, well, you can feel this palpable energy here in the gallery, in the City Gallery this evening with the opening of the exhibition here as part of EVE International. But Limerick in general seems to have this energy, this buzz, and I suppose again the presence of the college, of yes. The Art and Design College must be a big part of that.
Absolutely. Well, there's 180 students a year coming out of the college, so that's a significant number of people. And, you know, even if a percentage of those decide to stay in Limerick, it creates an energy. EVA has been around for over 30 years, and it's amazing that tonight its energy is still very real, as you say, and palpable. And maybe the year that it was missing, you know, we didn't have an EVA in 2011, there was an expectation and people and an anticipation around it, but everybody came in good spirit and again with the goodwill that exists in the city towards visual art. It continues to amaze me, and I've been an arts officer now for over 20 years.
I suppose one of the initiatives again that has singled Limerick out as being very particular is Creative Limerick, where spaces that weren't being used, retail spaces that weren't in use, were on offer to artists and others, I suppose in a very controlled way, for making art, for their use. How has that worked, and has it been a success?
Well, it's interesting that it was an initiative of the economic department of Limerick City Council. So it's not the first thing you think of when you think of vacant spaces and artists. You think, oh, the artists have mobilised themselves to occupy these spaces. But actually, it was the economic development unit of Limerick City Council. So to their credit, they took the model of the rental accommodation scheme, which is RAS, which is known as, where you act as the facilitator between the landlord and the client. And so they were taking that very basic council type approach to making something happen, in recognition of the fact that the city centre was beginning to look a little bit underutilised, and traders, as you know, are quite active, and also there's a lot of philanthropy associated with the people who did participate in this scheme, the O'Malley brothers in particular. And in one way they've been a victim of their own success, because that corner on Thomas Street that was so beautifully occupied has just recently unfortunately been sold and therefore the artists that have enlivened it have had to move, but the City Council are committed to finding new spaces for them.
It's a bit like what happened in Temple Bar in Dublin as well.
You
know, the artists sometimes create a space which in turn is sold on. But 35 years of EVA International, what does it mean in your experience? You know, how significant is it for Limerick, for the city?
It's a very significant event in the context of, you know, international contemporary art exhibitions. And I suppose over the years we probably didn't understand the value of it or the beauty of it and its kind of difference. And the feedback from artists and from curators has always been that we were very embedded again in the city. It's a reflection on the city's willingness to accept contemporary art and to allow artists to make work in a way that isn't in a judgmental way. Over the years, we continue to meet artists at other international contemporary art exhibitions who always remember Limerick fondly because of the model that we've used.
I suppose it's striking again that you have a number of venues to show the work and a great variety in those spaces as well. And clearly that's part of the success, I suppose, of EVA here.
And over 20 years, we have used many unusual spaces, let me tell you, including the boot of my car 1 year. So it always surprises, and it can sometimes perplex people. But it's a it's thrilling. We probably don't realise that tonight because we're in the midst of the opening, but it always has and leaves a lovely memory, certainly in my life anyway.
Sheila Deegan and Helen Carey there in Limerick. Aidan Dunn, remind us of the evolution of EVA International. Pretty impressive, 35 years on the go.
Well, it's extraordinary that it has gone on for so long. And it's gone through several phases of rebirth and reorganisation in that time. When it was launched in 1977, it was really quite a brave initiative. And I think that some of the founders, like Hugh Murray, the architect, and Sheila Deegan, who we've just heard on tape, Mike Fitzpatrick, and primarily Paul O'Reilly, who was then running the City Arts Gallery, they had a mind that they were in the provinces, the feeling was, and that they should have a show as significant as not only as the Irish Exhibition of Living Art, which was the primary show of contemporary art in Ireland annually then, but also ROSC. They thought it was important that there was an international dimension. So, in fact, they were taking on the biggest exemplars of their day, and it was quite audacious, and they did it very well. And it's gone generally from strength to strength. There have been problems along the way, inevitably, and it's gone down for a while and picked up again, as these things do.
And how significant would you say it is now on, I suppose, both the international and the Irish calendar?
I think it's very important on the Irish calendar. The international question is an interesting one because it's that sort of elusive goal of breaking through onto the international stage that sort of never quite seems to happen in Irish exhibitions. They brought in a succession of international curators, some of whom have been very good indeed. Yet that never quite translates into exporting Irish art on an equitable basis abroad.
Gemma Tipton, you've seen many EVAs over the years. What would you say are the defining characteristics of EVA? And again, it's something the change to the biennial show. I mean, how important do you think that is?
Well, everyone always used to call it the Limerick Biennial anyway. And so in some ways, it's just catching up to itself. Mm. One of the things that you can always expect is mad stuff happening all over Limerick. And they have a saying down there that if you see something really weird, EVA must be on. It's often very conceptual. You don't really go there for painting. And this is certainly the case this year.
I think, yeah, I'd say a lot of people will come away with exactly that comment. How would you say, and we'll come back to this later, and it's again pertinent to what we're talking about in terms of the international dimension to Irish art. How would you say it compares to Dublin Contemporary, for instance?
That's really tricky. I mean, there were so many artists in Dublin Contemporary, and I think it was handled very differently in that I know a number of the Irish artists were given a room and told to have fun. Whereas with EVA, it's much more tightly curated and there are specific works chosen. And I think the show hangs together a lot more tightly. The similarity with both of them is you need to give them an awful lot of time because there's so much video. It's really hard to get a proper first impression. I felt EVA would have benefited from some more not video work.
And again, this is a subject we will come back to because I have to say, personally, I did miss painting. And I know, Gemma, you were saying it's not known as an exhibition that if you like, Harold's painting. But I did miss something almost as simple and complex and visual as the David Hockney recent landscapes. You know, something that simple that would sit in there.
But in some ways, that's about changing your pace as you view a show because you see a show in its entirety and you may sit down to watch a whole video, depending on how tired your feet are and whether there's a chair, or if the video grabs you immediately. But then you want to have something different. And there is a lot of going from video to video to video, and you do feel it's a bit like homework after a while.
Aidan, would you share that?
Yes, I would. I think often you'd look at the curator in relation to EVA, and then you pretty much know what kind of show it's going to be. And I think if you know Annie Fletcher's work, and she's a very highly regarded international curator with a great many contacts on the international scene, when her appointment was announced, I thought, OK, there isn't really going to be a lot of painting in this show. And in fact, there's slightly less even than I would have anticipated. And on the day I was in Limerick going around, I met several people, some of them artists, and universally the comment was, there isn't much painting on the show, I can tell you that. And the one painter who's seriously there is Mark O'Kelly, And it's noticeable that the work of his that's included is very much about the mechanics of representation and the relationship of painting to photography. It's not really painting per se. It has a very conceptual dimension to it.
We'll be talking to Marco Kelly, hearing from him later in the programme. But I want to talk a little bit more about this. But before that, let's hear from the curator, Annie Fletcher, and also from director Woodrow Kernahan. First, Annie Fletcher, on the job of selecting work for this year's EVA.
Well, I mean, it was a big job because there was 2,000 entries, which we completely we were victims of our own success in a way. It was really an immense task. And it took months, actually, to kind of trawl through and look at all the work really seriously. And I chose it, I suppose. I mean, one, it's always a little bit of one's own taste. But, I mean, just extraordinary things that jumped out, quality work. I did definitely want to look at younger artists based in Ireland. I think that's an important tradition of EVA somehow. It's really important that they are showcased alongside sort of major international figures. And I also changed for the first time the idea of it being an open EVA, an invited EVA. I felt very firmly that anybody who... was selected, it didn't have to be in any kind of two-tier system. It was really important that they're just good enough to show and that's it. So I probably only added five or six artists to those who I selected through the open submission. What was extraordinary, we started to call it open proposal rather than open submission because we felt it was like a way of opening a conversation with different artists. And now that the whole the whole open submission went online, so many international people applied. Also, I talked to international curator colleagues of mine and encouraged them to tell people to apply. So it became a totally new way of having of seeing what's out there. And I'm not going to sort of reveal who was open and who was not, but I think people would be quite stunned at some of the really famous names in this who actually applied. In the end, it was just work that I found really exciting, but also work that really tried to think about the contemporary, what's happening in the world today.
There's a very striking overall title, After the Future. Tell me what that comes from and what you're trying to reflect in that.
Sure. After the Future is a book that Franco Berardi wrote recently, and he's really just looking at the kind of economic meltdown, the fact that we all feel like we're living in an economy right now and no longer a society.
He's an Italian political philosopher.
Exactly, an Italian political philosopher and media activist, and he, in fact, a part of the Autonomy Group all the way back in the 70s. So he's seen these things come and go over a long time, and he's been a really interesting thinker. And I found what he was saying about Europe right now in terms of what's happening in terms of the economic turmoil and the reconsideration of our lives really important. And also what his kind of rallying cry for artists, that art and culture is a space that can complexify the world again, and that perhaps we need to stop thinking about sort of efficiency and progress, partly because it's not working. It's simply not working. We need to rethink about how we want to live together today. And I suppose I loved the fact that he was suggesting we stop this relentless push towards the future and live in the present. And artists and culture is a huge part of how we can complexify our lives again.
You're based in the Netherlands, so it must be very interesting as well. You know, coming from Ireland, working there, coming back, it must be very interesting to see all of these perspectives and to, in a sense, have a greater sense of what's happening in Europe and the economic crisis meeting art and how art can address that.
Absolutely. I mean, we're suffering in the Netherlands from huge cuts and almost a scorched earth policy towards culture. You know, Greece is in economic meltdown. I mean, it's kind of all over Europe right now. What's going on is quite dramatic and quite interesting, and it impacts on all of us, and we have to look at it. But what I wanted to do with EVA is not lament. You know, and it was interesting coming back also because this economic recession feels a little familiar to me. I remember the last one, and I wasn't part of that generation of young artists growing up in a kind of economically robust situation in the 90s. So I found that their attitude, their kind of can-do and their confidence really, really interesting and quite exciting. And I suppose I wanted to reflect that. That's where I started to think, gosh, this feels oddly familiar, but you know, it's quite different. And I wanted to reflect on those things.
Woodrow Kernahan, coming to Limerick, coming to EVA International as a new director, what did you know about EVA? What did you know about Limerick before you came?
So I've been aware of EVA for many years and followed the succession of exhibitions, and I've been
aware of Limerick and wanted to move to Ireland for a long time, so the opportunity to work with Eva was something I jumped at.
What particular challenges would you have felt you faced coming in? To replace somebody like Paul O'Reilly, who had such a strong local association as well?
I guess it was a very privileged position to be able to take on the role of director of Eva and follow on from Paul O'Reilly, who'd been in the role for 30 years and built Eva from being one man in a van to what it is today. It's an extraordinary development. I think that the main challenge was that Eva didn't happen in 2011, so there was a lull in activity, and we had to kind of redevelop all the organisation, rebrand the organisation, and pick up momentum. So it was kind of like a relaunch. There's a lot of goodwill and history for Eva, but it was to make sure that that was maintained and working within the local arts community as well.
What do you want to happen in the future for Eva? I mean, are you confident that funding is there, for instance, to secure its future, that it will be this biannual international festival of real significance?
Well, the Arts Council has been hugely supportive. So we kind of worked in partnership to develop the organisation. But Eva is known as Ireland's biennial internationally. So if you go to Japan, China, that's what people talk about. What we would like to see is international funding, so the biennial is maybe is able to source funds outside of just the Arts Council and Irish funding as well.
I suppose Limerick often gets a bad press in relation to violence, to gangs, to intimidation, things that happen in Dublin as well, in many other cities, but Limerick has perhaps an unfair reputation. Is those sorts of issues, are they ones that you would in any way wish to reflect on or engage with as director of Eva?
Well, I think from my personal experience, that has not been my experience of Limerick. It has been quite largely the media portrayal of Limerick, which isn't accurate for the city itself. The city is a wonderful place.
The question for the two of you. Dublin Contemporary kicking off last year. Plans for another, again for a biannual international festival of art in Ireland. Can the two, I suppose, coexist and complement each other, Eva International and Dublin Contemporary? Is it possible for them to actually strengthen each other?
I have no problem with the idea of another art event. I think it's the more the merrier. I mean, it's up to everybody to think smartly about resources. I wasn't at Dublin Contemporary. It certainly was great on one level because it upped the ante. There was a lot of activity, a lot of artists had opportunities. And if anything, that's what's needed. We need Irish artists to be out there competing on the international sort of scene more. We need more international curators coming in. So if there's the resources, or if we sort of think about how to complement each other, I think that's really important. Competition is old fashioned as far as I'm concerned.
I guess it would be a long term ambition to work in partnership. We would be sharing audiences. Eva's very on a very different scale, but it's very important for us that we're a very artist centered organisation, that all the team, that the technicians we work with, everyone generally is an artist, so we're very supportive of artists, and I think working in partnership, it would be great.
Woodrow Kernaghan there. The whole concept of After the Future, as was interesting, taking its title from this Franco Berardi book. For the two of you, did that concept hold? Was it strong enough to unite the work in the show?
I'm quite sympathetic to the concept, and I thought it was quite good when I heard it. And I think in a way it is good. And what strikes me is that it dovetails very well about the way Limerick has handled its situation economically and culturally, in that it's a good city in terms of using, say, the vacant economic spaces for cultural purposes. It's been quite proactive in that way with the Creative Limerick Initiative, whereby cultural activities can take place rent-free in commercial venues. And Annie Fletcher also tapped into a kind of inherent energy that is there in Limerick anyway, with a lot of the alternative spaces that were functioning, like Occupy Arts, Ormston House, Limerick Printmakers, and Askeaton Arts even. And that I'm very sympathetic to that notion of engaging with what is going on rather than imposing a particular artistic regime, just coming in and imposing it on it. So to that extent, I think that the concept does work. And I mean, it is a tightly organized show that does carry through. So, yeah, no, I think it's a marginally, I'd say it's successful on that ground.
Gemma, again, I suppose some people might feel going around and reading the background on the work that it is, the whole thing is very curated.
I think the background worked least. The texts about the individual works and artists were on acetate, which was a nice conceit, but it made them quite difficult to read. But actually, they were difficult to read. They were very theoretical. And yes, the theory may or may not stand up, but actually, you also get, when art's really good, you get a feeling of it. And I did find the After the Future feeling, I had gone down feeling sort of overworked and sorry for myself. And I sort of wallowed in this end of days, something coming afterwards. And I was really transported by it. And actually, there's something to be said for an exhibition with an awful lot of video when you are exhausted and possibly hungover, because you can sit and you really do take it in.
What were your personal highlights? I mean, there's a great deal of work, 40 artists. And I must say, one thing I loved was going around the various venues and actually getting a real sense of the city as well as of the work this year. Aidan, what stood out for you?
Well, there's a video artist called Alva Nivreen who stood out for me. And it was very interesting when I came upon this, because I've been sort of making my way through video after video, and you get a sort of certain kind of fatigue through the whole thing. Because some of the video is quite protracted and consists of little else other than talking heads. And in one case, even, it's described as raw video. And you think, what, they couldn't even edit it? And I'm not going to hang around for hours listening to people who couldn't edit their video. And then I came upon Alva Nivreen's work, and I've seen it before. And I must say that it's video. It's superbly done. It's sort of, it reminds me slightly of Tarkovsky, say, in his cinematic style. It's dreamy, it's beautiful, and it draws you in very quickly and then engages you consistently. And at that point, I thought, okay, it's not my problem. The problem is the stuff I was looking at wasn't that interesting. Now here's something really visually interesting.
And her work, I think, is at this interesting, again, very interesting place, 103, 104 O'Connell Street.
Yes. It is an interesting place, and it has a certain roughness and texture that contrasts with the City Gallery, which is very finished and sharp and precise. And I must say, the installation in the City Gallery looks really well. It's very well done, as is the curation in that sense throughout. I would concur with the problem over the labels, and the curator speak in which they're written is kind of daunting, because it directs you in a very particular line of interpretation and doesn't quite allow you to make what you will of what you're looking at.
Gem, I think you were very taken by Alvin Devine's work as well.
Absolutely loved it. Totally agree with Aidan. Also loved Mona Vatuma and Florin Tudor's Rite of Spring, which was small boys, I don't know what the city was, burning off pollen. And very simple and very beautiful. Also loved Adrian O'Connell's Library. That's on the top floor of Limerick City Gallery. And the video itself echoes the architecture of the gallery, because there's people on a balcony and you see all this beautiful fluttering paper, and then you realise they're angrily destroying and chucking books down. So you're caught in this, enjoying the spectacle and hating what they're doing. Other one I really loved, because it reminds me of my brief periods working in offices, was Pilvi Takala's trainee video. It's the kind of intern that's been sent to drive you demented. And there was an awful lot, when I went back the next day, of people in suits, obviously on their lunch breaks from offices, really relishing it.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I want to hear from the artist, from Pilvi Takala, shortly. But just for our listeners, tell us what they will see if they go along to Limerick City Gallery.
There's a boardroom table. I think there's a flip chart, but I might be making that up. It was, it was such a great experience. You actually remember it more real than it was. And there's projected email correspondence and also a videoed scenario of this trainee who turns up as an intern and basically just sits there staring into space, saying she's doing head work, she doesn't need a computer, no, she's quite happy where she is. And nobody could understand what the hell is going on. And I just adored it.
It was very funny. And of course, it was the Finnish artist, Pilvi Teckler herself, at the company Deloitte & Touche.
So the CEO of the company, this is Deloitte Finland, so it's an international corporation, but in Deloitte Finland in Helsinki, they have 300 people working in the office. So the CEO, the boss of marketing, the department where I got my position, and a few other people knew about it, but most didn't. So it was like an undercover deal with this company. I would never get this job with my own skills, so it was a chance to get entrance to a community that would be closed from me for otherwise. So I stayed there for 1 month, and the deal was that I can film with hidden cameras and I can do whatever I want. So I basically first just tried to fit in, tried to be the marketing trainee that I was trying to be, and then after 2.5 weeks I decided to just think not to do any physical work. So I thought that would be challenging for the community.
I imagine it would be very challenging for co-workers. What kind of response did you get from them?
Well, most people just get really uncomfortable. It's a kind of performative act that is not shocking at first, but it gets to you when it continues, and then it gets more scary than something like sudden that happens. That is, I would show up naked at work. It would be a very short event, and it would be over quickly. But this was like continuing for days, and people got really nervous and kind of worried, also scared, I think. But there was also a different reaction. Some people were more open and asked me what I'm doing, because I didn't want to appear crazy. I wanted to appear as a person who decided to work in a certain way, so it wasn't being lazy or crazy.
Another very striking aspect of the installation is this series of emails that we read on screen. You know, people saying, "Who is this girl? Why isn't she working? What's going on?"
So there was emails, for example, that describing that a girl has been sitting here since morning, and she's staring out of the window with a glazed look in her eyes, like very precise description. And they said, "This is also funny and also scary to some extent, like." Did you lose a person? Is this a person who is lost? Or also they said, they asked me what I'm doing, and I said I'm doing brain work, and they were like, is this okay or what?
What was the response then of your co-workers, as it were, when they discovered that this was an art piece, that it was an installation?
I mean, we only really revealed it after 4 months. So they had already forgotten about me. For me, it's important not to reveal it immediately, because I don't want it this candid camera effect where you immediately can forget about the event. So they circulated jokes and talked about working methods for a month after I left. But then we asked all the people who appear in my video first for permission, and when they approved, we told them not to tell anybody. And then the company revealed it to everybody in a summer event. But I wasn't there. Sorry, I was too far away. I couldn't get there. But
you had another job.
I had another job very far away. But I talked to some of them in the opening then in the museum where we showed it first. And they were just describing what they were thinking when they saw me. So it wasn't a reaction of shock or maybe at first, but it was like a re-reflection on the time.
Finnish artist Pilvi Teckler there, one of the artists taking part in this year's EVA International in Limerick. Aidan Dunn, what other pieces stood out for you this year?
Well, I liked Pilvi's piece as well, I must say. And it actually reminded me of Herman Melville's story Bartleby, about the clerk who suddenly kind of withdraws from all activity in the office and sort of fades away. And also as well, Agnes Varda's film Vagabonda, about a girl who withdraws from life. So I thought there was a lot of material there, and it was very rich.
Could you describe a piece at the City Gallery, Priscilla Fernandez's Product of Play?
I thought that was very successful and very well done. And it's about how a play is actually a pedagogic activity rather than being something that frees and liberates us. She very subtly guides us through the notion that play is training us how to be productive members of society at a certain point and leading us along. And the dance video that she had with that I thought was superb as well. And although, again, it looks like a case of free expressive movement, actually it's guided by a very strict disciplinary principle, which I probably shouldn't say because it's better if you look at it and figure it out for yourself. It's quite good.
Gemma, what did you make of that piece?
It's funny. I mean, it just goes to show no one's right or wrong when it comes to art because it left me quite cold. I enjoyed watching it once. And then when I sat and watched it through a second time, I thought, nah, got it. It's a little boy sorting blocks and which a little girl has messed up. And then she starts singing opera and smiling wickedly. And I thought, yeah, thanks.
Again, yes, as you say, different strokes and all of that. But I suppose what I was struck by was watching people watching the work, the different responses. And it was fascinating to see children in there. And we'd hear from some kids later. But children with all the red paper that was strewn everywhere and their response to it, which almost became an artistic act in itself.
Well, it was almost like an echo of Adrian O'Connell's library piece, because in the morning when I was there, they were chucking them over the balcony and obviously blissfully unaware that the text on them was about the torture and abuse of women, including female genital mutilation in Ireland. So it was another one of those scary two meanings, juxtapositions at once.
Actually, one thing that struck me as I looked at all that, I was thinking, gosh, it might have been interesting to have had a text like the fiscal treaty, something to do with the fiscal treaty here, you know, and having kids chucking that over the balcony. But yeah. It's maybe something that engaged very directly with Ireland now, because somehow, like you, I was almost slightly disturbed by that juxtaposition and some of the fact that we're tramping through texts that are of such significance.
But it also made me realise that, I mean, we were all there having a lovely time at the opening and chatting to friends at the same time as the world is falling around about our ears. So what you're doing when you're walking through this really shocking text is just what we're doing every day as we go about our daily businesses.
Just pushing things aside. And with our heads or our feet.
Well, there's a certain level as well that you have to pretend the really awful stuff isn't going on simply to carry on.
Another piece as well that is back, is the only piece that's back, but it's a wonderful piece, is Luc Deleuze's that wonderful signature sculpture, Construction X, down in Arthur's Quay Park. And it's a terrific piece.
It is a terrific piece, I agree. And it's made from shipping containers. It's on an epic scale and it's very well sited on the river. I had mixed feelings about it because I thought it's the biggest, most impressive piece in the show. And I thought, in a way, what the show lacked was a big, impressive piece. And the reason I say that is because that's sort of reviving something that was done in 1994. And if that turns out to be your showstopper, it slightly diminishes what you're doing now rather than creates a strong link to the past.
Gemma, did you have that feeling at all, or were you glad to see? I hadn't seen it in 94, so I was really happy to see that there.
I hadn't seen it either in 94. It made me think that it was easier to like it because it's not permanent. A lot of the really epic public sculpture we get is there for all time. And so it raises all sorts of questions about who decided, who chose, who has to live with it. But you can enjoy this in a moment knowing that it will be gone.
Though I must say, I became so, in a sense, so attached to it that I think I'd be quite happy to have it there.
Well, I'd love it to
have it there as a permanent.
Well, no, it's funny, and it's an odd sort of compliment to pay an artwork that you're glad it's not going to be there forever. But and actually, I'd be very happy if it stayed, but I would have felt differently about it if it was permanent.
Let's hear from the artist himself, from Luc Deleuze.
For me, it symbolizes nothing. It symbolizes only an X. I have to say, in fact, I'm an architect, but I thought that we built too much on Earth. That's a difficult position for an architect. So I started to realize my ambitions with Lego blocks. And after a few years, I changed in containers. So I started from 80... The first design was from 1980, and the first realization, I think, in Switzerland, it was 83. And so I made, I don't know, 15 different models with containers.
And was it a big challenge in terms of engineering to put this together?
No, because I got a lot of experience by doing such constructions. In the beginning it were more easy pieces and they become more and more complicated. But what I want to do with those constructions is make an equilibrium. That's in fact idea. Sometimes I make constructions and when you see it at first you think, oh, it can stand.
And it can. What happened between 1994 and now? It's almost 20 years, 18 years. Was this piece somewhere else?
I reconstructed it once again in Antwerp for an sculpture show, solo show, with five different pieces with containers.
Because it looks like it belongs here. It looks like it really looks like it should stay.
Yeah, the circle is really on the scale of the piece, but that's by accident.
Yeah, it's sitting on this stone plinth, a circle within a circle, in a sense. I mean, it really feels like it was made for this space.
Yes, it looks like it, but it's a little bit an accident. I choose the place, but when I chose the place 80 years ago, I didn't know that it was so perfect in scale. Maybe intuitively I knew it, but not constant.
Apparently people have said here in Limerick that they really took this piece to heart, you know, that it became a hugely popular piece of art in the city.
Yeah, maybe I can't. I'm not all the time here because I know the piece, and it's a little bit silly the artist to walk around this piece. But I think when they like it so much, they have to keep it because I think to demolish it, it's as costly as to build it.
Belgian artist Luc Delue there. You're listening to Arts Tonight. My guests, critics Aidan Dunn and Gemma Tipton. We're talking about IVA International Limerick's now biennial visual arts exhibition on view all over the city until the 12th of August. We visited the exhibition on National Drawing Day and dropped in on a children's art workshop at the City Gallery.
My name is Evie McCarthy. I'm the Audience and Access Coordinator for Limerick City Gallery. And today what we have for National Drawing Day and also for the opening of IVA International, we have a children's workshop. The title of the exhibition is After the Future. So what our tutor, Jenny Phelan, is going to be doing is making futuristic cities with the kids and what they think the future will
can
look like.
See? So you can see mine is balancing on this big platform. So cities are floating on the sea. This is my big sea here.
I think it looks like a boat.
It does. It's a bit like a boat. It's floating on the sea. And can you see how different all the buildings look? This one looks like a big dragon's tail or a dinosaur's tail, doesn't it?
It looks like a sail. That looks like a shark's.
It looks like a shark's fin.
And this is the city of the future. And up there where the pom-poms are flying saucers.
Yeah.
And those are bits of everything
on
every bit of paper. Okay, so we did a bit of everything that was on every piece of paper. And buildings, and sky, sun, and some night with stars.
And my buildings are crazy in the picture. Because I wanted them to be crazy for the future. And we're going to have standing up trees. And we're going to have standing up people and flying cars.
Fascinating to hear that sort of level of engagement from the community, from children, from parents in Limerick. Gemma, for you, you know, is that level of engagement strong enough, do you think, between the city, its population, and the work that we see, for instance, well, especially this year?
I think it's really hard to pontificate about what other people like and what other people are doing. I certainly saw people enjoying it, and Limerick has a legacy of being right through the city, so people know to expect it. And I also thought there were some pieces where they actually didn't feel like art at all. There was Zanny Beg and Oliver Ressler's video, The Bull Laid Bare, which is actually a series of economic lectures. And there was a quote in it from Bertolt Brecht, which says, paraphrasing, "What's the crime of robbing a bank compared to the crime of founding one?" And I felt it was interesting that I had to go into an art gallery to get that, whereas any economist, economic student would know all about it. So it depends what level you go in on. But I think there's plenty of points of engagement, definitely.
It was obvious that some of the people there, when we were there, were students from the Art College. And again, that really seems to have been a strong influence into all that happens in EVA, and obviously a really strong support structure as well for it, Gemma.
Well, Mike Fitzpatrick has moved on to be head of the Limerick, and he had gone via head of Limerick City Gallery to Limerick School of Art and Design. So they certainly all know where everything is and how to make it happen there. And I think they've done it really well.
Aidan, we're going to hear in a moment from Mark O'Kelly, and you mentioned his work earlier in the programme. Remind us of what he's doing particularly in the work that we see in O'Connell Street, in 103, 104 O'Connell Street.
Mark O'Kelly, he's a very interesting painter in that usually his work is about the construction of representation and the way that what we see is actually usually constructed. And in the work in O'Connell Street, he's looking at the way photographs are constructed and the way that relates to painting. I suppose you could say he's taking a leaf out of the book of Gerhard Richter in this sense, that Richter is famous for having created the distinction between painting and photography, when he said that a photograph is only a surface, but a painting is always more than a surface. And Mark O'Kelly is exploring that territory very, very cleverly and very well.
In the work I'm making, I'm really considering both the idea of borders and obstacles as real physical ways of denoting and controlling nationalities, peoples, populations. And then I'm also thinking about those ideas of borders and obstacles in terms of the body and personal relationships. And I'm trying to, if you like, play across this idea of that metaphor of a border and the idea of the individual body. And then I'm trying to pan out from that and relate that to ideas of how we denote our being in space in terms of populations, civilizations and things like that.
So we see maps, we see images of migration. Very struck as well by, in one of the installations, says Elizabeth Smart's novel, great novel by Grand Central Station, I sat down and wept. That book of particular significance to you?
It's really great significance actually to me. And I think in the title as well, this idea of the connection of weeping and trauma with the idea of the station, I think is really important. The idea that a train station in modernism, in the popular consciousness of modern culture in the 20th century, the train station, the idea of the station itself, becomes the zone of this kind of epiphany or this kind of like tragedy. The train station, in a way, is a cathedral. It's a cathedral in a way, but it's all about this kind of separation. So this and the idea of it being the idea of these stations and the idea of a station as a strategic military piece of infrastructure is very, very important as well. I think in the painting of the map, what you actually see is there isn't political borders denoted, but the dots that make up the markings on the painting denote population centres, and we see how they gather around water. So I'm playing on that idea of the dots constantly throughout the work as well, and playing on the idea of this idea of a point in space as having some kind of idea of significance.
You're also painting, and I suppose one of the things that's striking about the exhibition this year is the lack of painting. There's a huge emphasis on installation, on video and film, on other media. And is that reflecting for you the reality of how people, artists now, younger artists, are engaging with art? Is there less emphasis on painting, or people moving away from it to different media?
Well, it's, I would probably prefer to think about painting in a more expanded way. And I think, peculiarly enough, in my opinion, I would not really make a distinction often between painting and photography. I think that photography is a continuation of the history of painting. And I think if you look at a lot of the installations and you look at the way the images are composed, lit, the colour, the different notions of space and all of these forms of representation, I think these things are quite easy to relate to the history of painting in many ways. In many ways, I think the history of painting they're relating to often is pre-20th century. But I think also if you look at the work of Annabelle Catalan, I think, who's at the Limerick City Gallery, his work is painting, in my opinion, although peculiarly to talk about that, it's a wonderful ceiling hung installation. It's about light and colour and form and wall paintings. So I would consider him another painter in a way. But in some ways you could extend that argument to include a lot of the other pieces in the work. I think in Sam Kyo's show as well, you see there's a panel painting that's hung by a ribbon from the wall and other things. So painting in this instance is trying to integrate itself, I think, in most cases, into a broader idea of what the ideas are in art and how painting relates to those ideas. But I think the ideas come first. My point being, I think that painting it's quite an integrated language, and I think people are very knowledgeable of painting. So I feel one of the ways paintings exist in the show is that the viewer brings painting with them. There is painting in the show, but it's up to the viewer to kind of define painting in the show and find it in some way.
Artist Mark O'Kelly there in Limerick. Gemma, it's interesting to, again, just pick up briefly on what he's saying there about, in a way, photography being this natural extension of painting and what he's doing. And again, this comes back to what we're saying about maybe the perceptible lack of painting in Eva. But I'm wondering, in relation to this, you know, is he reflecting what's happening in general terms with young Irish artists?
I don't think so. I think there's a huge amount of really interesting painting going on. I think this is a particular curatorial strand reflecting a particular kind of work. And it's interesting that another artist, Niamh O'Malley's video, was a video of a life model. So it's a work about painting, but painting's underscoring it.
But you would both say that there is a very, very strong strand of young painters working.
Absolutely.
It's quite extraordinary.
Rubicon at the moment is really strong young artist painting.
I want to go back to something Woodrow Kernahan said about the possibility of, in the future, Eva being a partner with Dublin Contemporary. Do you think that might be a runner?
I think it might. I think it makes sense in that. I always thought that perhaps Eva should have been, in a sense, Dublin Contemporary, that that was an international show, that we had a proven track record that we were really good at and we could have built it up. So I would not be averse to seeing Eva as the sort of primary partner in any such arrangement, in fact.
I also think we have to examine how to best give Irish artists an international platform, though. And there's been an awful lot of work done by the private commercial galleries going to art fairs, being part of events and exhibitions like that, and by Irish curators working abroad. So there's a massive network that's promoting Irish artists abroad that we're by and large unaware of here. And not to ignore that when spending an awful lot of money on flagship things that we all go and enjoy.
On a broader front in relation to all this, it's a time of huge change. I mean, you've Emma moving temporarily to Earlsford Terrace. And the last time you were both in the programme, we were talking about Dublin Contemporary at Earlsford Terrace. You have the long-promised merger of the boards of AMA, the National Gallery, and the Crawford and Cork, still on the cards, and a new director at the National Gallery. I mean, it's a very interesting time and a time of great challenge, I suspect.
Tremendous challenge. I think for both Sarah Glennie, who's taken over at AMA, and for Sean Rainbird in the National Gallery, they've really landed in the hot seats, because they have to really fight for their own existence, I think, now they find themselves in new jobs. And it's a very difficult task, because for whatever reason, amalgamation is going through as government policy. And it's up to them to try and make it manageable and make it so that the institutions that they had are not damaged in the process. And that's going to take a lot of careful negotiation. For example, I was talking to Sean Rainbird last week, and he was saying that he doesn't think that it's viable to have an overall Uber board that controls all three institutions, because it's so important that the board of a particular institution is passionate about that institution. And it's not going to happen in an overall arrangement.
I think it's definitely, well, we know it's inevitable. It's interesting that two of the three, Sarah Glennie and Sean Rainbird, are new into their jobs. Peter Murray is the only incumbent. It feels like a good thing that people who aren't hidebound by tradition are part of the change, but it also is slightly scary that people who don't know the institutions like the back of their hands are shepherding it through. So yes, very interesting times.
And I suppose it makes one very glad of the consistency of something like 35 years of Viva International.
Indeed, yes.
Certainly does.
And long may it continue. Thanks to both of you, Aidan Dunn and Gemma Tipton. Viva International runs in Limerick until the 12th of August. Full details at eva.ie. Paul Bradley was on sound. Sarah Binchy produced tonight's programme. From all of us, good night.